Hi, this is Blaine Parker. Thanks for joining me and Honey Parker in the Big Bad Branding Teleseminars. What you're about to hear is a replay of the first teleseminar, The Right Road to Your Brand, originally recorded on Wednesday, May 29th, 2013.
Welcome to the first in the Big Bad Branding Club teleseminars. This is teleseminar number one, The Right Road to Your Brand. And the purpose of this teleseminar is going to be not only to review brand, but to dig further into the meat of branding so that you have a better understanding of how an emotionally evocative brand looks and what you need to consider when you're working on your own brand. And it just occurred to me, I've muted Honey after this.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Huh.
Oh, I can hear you. No, because we're on the same line, of course. We didn't do two separate lines this time. Forgive me, having a little technical mental lapse there. Anyway, going back to what I was saying, we should first reiterate what brand really is. And as you probably recall from our presentation at Guerrilla Business School, brand is the one way you want your core customer to feel about your business. Honey?
You got it right.
Did I get it right?
You were spot on.
Well, why don't you repeat it for me?
Okay. So branding is the one way you want your core customer to feel about your business.
Yeah, you got it right, too.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Why one? One, because you need to focus. Nobody can focus on more than one thing at a time. Why feel? Because as we all have ever learned in sales training courses, buying decisions are made emotionally. They will be justified intellectually, but people will make their buying decision emotionally. And ultimately, this is a really simple concept. Here's one of the problems. People complicate this all the time. And getting to simple means weeding through what's been made complicated. And you're also going to have a lot of things that make it seem complicated as you're trying to get to simple.
Yeah, I mean, when we did our presentation and some of the brands that we're going to discuss today, you know, when you get to the finish line, let's call it, where you understand how you want the core customer to feel about your business, and it's solidified, and you have the tagline, and you hear it, and you see it, and you kind of, it's very easy to say, of course that's it, which, you know, almost makes it seem like, oh my gosh, why didn't I come up with my own brand in 2 seconds? You know, when you start at the answer, you know, it always seems easier. So, you know, it's worth going through all this work to get to that simple, but it does take time. So, you know, I just want to make sure that everybody gives themselves the leeway to take the time to do it correctly.
And here's the thing is, you know, it's a process. It does take some time. But when you get there, you're going to know it. You know, we do this for a lot of people, so they don't have to go through all the work. We work with them. You know, we will go through this business in stages. And, you know, so it's not like it's happening in a vacuum. But here's what happens frequently when we get to the brand and we present it. We have actually made clients cry. And while I don't expect any of you to cry once you've figured out your own brand, you will have, like, the aha moment where all of a sudden it crystallizes and it seems to make perfect sense. So, that's a reiteration of what brand is and things you're going to have to go through when you're getting there. One of the things we're also going to talk about here is some of the multi-million dollar missteps that have happened in the name of advertising a brand, just because it's fun to learn from other people's boneheaded mistakes made by huge companies on the national stage. And
but more importantly, we're going to talk about the mistake they made in how they got to their conclusion. So you can start to see why, you know, some of the darlings we hold on to don't really stand.
Yeah. This is a relationship. We said this in the room in Los Angeles, and we're going to see how they have screwed up with these relationships, which involve introducing yourself, making yourself likable, and then staying a friend.
Yeah, those are the three things that your business is going to do when it goes in the world. It's going to introduce itself to your core customer. It's going to make itself likable, relatable to your core customer. And then your marketing is going to continue to keep your business a friend to the customer, whether that's in follow-up or however you service your customer. So your business is going to be a really good friend.
Okay, moving on. Let's review. How do you get the brand? You have to figure out who you are, who's your core customer, and what makes you matter. What we're going to do is show you the way we have walked through this with some of our other customers, some of our other clients.
A couple of other small businesses in slightly different categories, so you can start to see how this worked, what we went through, what we found out about them, and how we applied that to creating their brand.
Now, the first one we're going to talk about is actually one of our favorite brands. Did you say something, Ann?
I did not.
I heard a noise there that wasn't me. The business came to us with the name Coastal Cyberknife. And if you know of the Cyberknife, it is basically it's a cancer treatment. And the doctor's name was Dr. Ramesh Kumar. Cyberknife is basically robotic radio surgery. And the name Coastal Cyberknife is essentially about a geographical location and a piece of hardware. There is really nothing good to feel about this. Nothing to feel about this.
Yeah, he was on a coast, and he used this giant item.
And, you know, if that is the thing you know you're looking for, the name might help you. But if you just happened to be searching and ended up on his website all by accident, it was probably really frightening because the homepage was dominated by a photograph of a patient lying on a table with this gigantic robotic arm pointing down at them and aiming this thing at their head. It looked like something out of Star Trek.
Yeah, it was really horrifying. I couldn't imagine being a cancer patient and going through all the turmoil that accompanies that and then seeing this and seeing like this horrifying thing that could happen to you. It was so misleading once you met the man behind this business.
So what we had to do was go back to the beginning and figure out who is Dr. Ramesh Kumar.
So the first thing we did was we just let him talk.
And after listening to his story, which you know we did for a good hour, we basically, here's the Reader's Digest version of what happened. We found out that he loves what he does because it is deep in him. As a boy, he lost his father and then his guardian uncle, both to cancer, both in rapid succession, and he really feels this to his core. He's a caring and concerned person who wants nothing but the best for his patients, and he really does have empathy, obviously. And his chief difference is that he gives his patients 24-hour access to talk to him about whatever is on their mind. It doesn't matter what it is. He actually gives his patients his personal cell phone number.
This was crazy to us. You know, here's a guy who, and crazy good, he runs 3 cancer centers, and he's giving out his cell phone number to patients, which really let us know that he walked the walk. It wasn't just him saying, you know, gosh, I care. It was, you know, his deed showed us how much he cared, that he really, I mean, he was almost like a country doctor, which, I mean, you just had to love him.
So, who is his core customer? Or in this case, it would be his core patient. Well, we whittled this all down to somebody named Mrs. Positive Diagnosis.
And very quickly, I just want to point out, this is something we do, and I'd suggest for you all to do it as well. We name our core customer, even though it's still, you know, we're saying we're focusing down, we're still representing a lot of people. But when you give them a name, like Mrs. Positive Diagnosis, you almost start to see them, and it's easier to speak to them as a person and really relate to them as an individual. So I definitely suggest doing that as you go through this process.
So Mrs. Positive Diagnosis is between the ages of 40 and 70. She may have cancer herself, or it may be her husband or an elderly parent or an in-law. But in any case, she's typically made the primary medical decision for her family, and now she's either making it once again for herself or is a key influencer in the decision. And if she's not the patient herself, she's likely to accompany the patient to the oncologist. Her single biggest fear here is obviously death. But as it directly pertains to the good doctor, her fear is of the unknown and that she'll be treated like a piece of meat by a superior ego-driven doctor, which really, it's amazing how often this happens in cancer treatment.
Yeah, what we found out when we were talking to him was that as people are going through this process, they're often just being told, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. Now you need to do this, go over here, do that. And there's not a lot of relating to them as a person and turning to them and saying, how do you feel? You know, what's going on? How does this sit with you? You know, I just told you this. How would you like to proceed?
So, her immediate joy, I mean, where is she going to find her joy in all this? Her immediate joy will be found in feeling that she's been heard. Ultimately, her joy will be found in surviving cancer, we hope. But in the short run, it's about knowing that there's somebody listening to her. So, what makes Dr. Kumar's coastal cyberknife matter? Well, what he loves matters to her because he is exactly what she wants, a compassionate professional with a sympathetic ear. He gets her past the fear by reassuring her of his key difference. He wants her to feel well cared for, and the new brand we're creating has to reflect all of this. And I think, honey, you specifically as an art director wanted to talk about colors and fonts in this area.
Well, you know, when we were talking about how he needed to put people at ease, and this is something, again, when you're going through your branding, once you realize how you need somebody to feel, that should start to influence your color decisions. For him, we picked very soft blues, things that were very calm, fonts that were that had an open flow to them, and a serif, almost a movement to the edge as opposed to hard edges. You know, everything had to be soothing and just a very easy conversation.
Okay.
So, Mr. Parker, why don't you show me the brand?
Show you the brand?
Yeah.
Coastal Cyberknife became 1-to-1 Cancer Treatment Center. And the tagline is, it's personal.
And also, you should know, he had 3 centers at the time and was talking about growing. So it was always 1-to-1 Cancer Treatment Center of Okeechobee or 1-to-1 Cancer Treatment Center of Milwaukee. It, you know, it could then grow from there.
Ooh, he's grown to Milwaukee.
Well, I just picked that up.
He is in Central Florida right now. We missed that part. Anyway, at 1-to-1, you're not talked at. You're a partner in a dialogue. And your involvement in your treatment returns a feeling of control and ultimately your dignity. It's actually surprising how often cancer doctors will strip away a patient's dignity. In fact, if you've ever read Lance Armstrong's autobiography, It's Not About the Bike, even he got into a situation where a doctor told him, well, here's the way it's going to be, pal. He said, yeah, well, see you, bye.
And just to go back to the name again, 1-to-1, that was really important because what he did and what not every doctor is willing to do was say, I'm equal to you. You know, I'm going to speak to you and you're going to speak to me and you'll listen to me and I'm going to listen to you. And it was very much an equal footing back and forth. And, you know, I was really impressed that he embraced it the way he did.
So with Dr. Kumar, you're more than a patient. You're actually a partner in the cure. And we did his brand, but we didn't do his materials. We think he's handling all his advertising himself because, you know, if you look at his website and things, it's like, okay, it's kind of got that look to it. But even if it's not the slickest material, his brand is absolutely there in full force. It's really kind of interesting how well he has just claimed that territory and just clings to it.
Yeah, because once he understood the core of how he was talking to people, it all came together. There's another brand that we did for somebody who, again, we did the branding, and she went on and did her own materials. She's got a wellness clinic in Canada, and we were just saying to each other, I wonder how she's doing. And out of the blue, I got a message from her on Facebook, and she told me that she's expanding her business and buying a new house. And she so understood her brand, and even her Facebook posts are right in line with it, and it's really helped her build her audience.
Another business that came to us for branding, and it was an interesting one because it's a common challenge with this kind of business. The law offices of Susan M. Graham. You've often heard that you shouldn't name a business after yourself because you can't sell it. That's not always true. There are times where absolutely your name makes perfect sense. But in the case of Susan M. Graham, she was like so many other law offices. She had a shingle with a lawyer's name out in front. Now, she didn't come to us because she needed more business. She came to us because business was fine. To sell the law offices of Susan M. Graham to anyone not named Susan M. Graham.
Yeah, I mean, she's basically a lawyer with an assistant.
Yeah. So, let's go back to who is she? Well, she's a woman on a mission, much like the good doctor Ramesh Kumar. She had found a direction, a professional direction, out of personal experience. Her father had died without an estate plan, and it created an emotional and financial turmoil for her mother. And she watched this and thought, okay, this is never going to happen to anyone I know ever again. I got to do something about this. I want to prevent this from happening to as many people as possible. And she became a trailblazer. She got a law degree at a time when women in Idaho didn't get law degrees. She was actually accused of taking slots in the law school away from men who had families.
Susan Graham is in her 60s now.
Yeah. One of her hobbies is picketing.
I love
to this day. She is one hell of a woman. Now, as a lawyer, she is using her decades of expertise in estate planning to help seniors enjoy their lives. She sets up estate plans. She protects their finances, their homes, and even their medical care. And her philosophy is that people are only truly free to enjoy what life holds when they aren't bogged down by fear, worry, and anxiety, which is... It happens. It's an ambient thing. I mean, people don't walk around going, I'm scared, I'm worried, and I'm anxious, but it's there, and they don't really realize it until they deal with it. And the thought of losing financial freedom, of losing a home, of losing contact with loved ones, of losing life as you know it, it can be paralyzing. And this paralysis will lead to inertia, which becomes a type of motion. The longer people don't move on their financial affairs with their estates, the more their dwindling options limit the potential for maintaining quality of life. And she loves being a plain-talking, straight shooter. She loves working with someone who fears the worst and then handing them the best. She essentially said this to us.
Yeah, I mean, here's what kind of plain talker she is. She speaks in front of rooms full of seniors, and this is how she typically gets most of her business. But she's telling them that they need to be clear with their belongings. You have to be very specific and let people know which gun and which piece of China you're leaving to who. So she's talking about guns and China.
Who gets the China, who gets the gun.
Who gets the China, who gets the gun.
So who is her core customer? Well, much like the good doctor, we're talking to women. In this case, her name is Senior Mrs. The heart of our target is the wife of an older couple. And while Senior Mrs. is not typically schooled in matters of finance and estate planning, she does drive the decisions in this area. She's middle to upper middle class. She's at least a high school graduate. She may have been a nurse or a teacher. She has saved modestly throughout her life, and the net worth of her estate is likely between $1 and $3 million. Her husband may have been a tradesman, like a plumber or a carpenter, or maybe a blue-collar entrepreneur like a general contractor or the owner of an air conditioning business. This is the heart of her business, and the way she sees it, Senior Mrs. represents the heart of America. She's worked hard. She and her husband are now retired. She enjoys her grandkids, and she isn't looking for anything fancy. She just wants to be able to enjoy what she and her husband have worked so hard for. Her fear is she's going to be steamrolled. She's finally decided to do something about the estate, but she doesn't know where to turn. And until now, she's been afraid of lawyers and estate planning. What's finally motivated her to move could be an even greater fear, like witnessing what's happened to someone close to her. Or maybe she's had her hand forced through tragedy and now has to respond quickly. But ultimately, she's afraid she's going to be buffaloed by a superior, fast-talking Sharpie in an expensive suit.
Yeah, and what we were finding in this situation, and looking at what your competition is doing is always incredibly important because, like we had said, you never want to be a Me Too brand. But in this case, we didn't want to be a Me Too brand because we didn't like what everybody else was doing. A lot of lawyers in this category really feed on fear. Well, I'm going to scare people into my office. And that's not what she wanted to do.
Absolutely did not want to go down that road.
That's not what we wanted to do, and we really didn't have to.
So what makes Susan Graham matter? Well, she revels in being totally relatable to her core customer. She wants to create a life-changing experience for everybody involved. She gives her clients the freedom to enjoy what they have, living richer lives for longer. And giving them this gift is also a gift back to herself because it makes her feel good and it becomes her driving purpose. She uses the law to transform lives. So, with all this in mind, drum roll please.
Show me the brand.
The law office of Susan M. Graham became Senior Edge Legal. The tagline, it's your turn.
So what we wanted to do was, in the name of the business, make it clear what it was about. So we put senior in the name, so all of a sudden people start to self-select. It's not a law office for, you know, all the other things you could go to a law office for. And Senior Edge, because we wanted it to be positive, we wanted people to feel like, oh, they were getting an edge, they were getting an advocate by going here. And it's your turn, because you know what, it's really your turn to live your life to the fullest.
And, you know, instead of preying on fear, which could be very easily done, it is done frequently. I've worked with a lot of lawyers in categories like this. And very often it's like, uh-oh, you better do this now. Instead of that, she's offering optimism. And part of that optimism is the logo. It's a stylized icon of a sprout of green grass.
Yeah, what we did as far as colors for her was we used, I think, 3 or 4 shades of green. So they gradated from, they started from a really bright yellowy green all the way down to a much deeper hunter green. And the grass, the idea that the grass is greener really resonated with her core customers. People just kept telling her how much they loved it. The other thing we liked about green,
it's a color of money.
It's a color of money, and it's an intelligent, thoughtful color. So it was optimistic, but serious enough.
Hey, here's a sidebar for you. Apparently painting your ceiling green will make you smarter.
I would just like to point out that we have no green ceilings in our home.
Not at all.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, so that was the law office of Susan M. Graham becoming Senior Edge Legal.
So let's do one more example, but in a very different category.
Very different. Phil's Development, which I think is absolutely one of my favorite names, if for no other reason than how long it took me to realize what it meant.
Well, I really, it's a software development company, and we met this guy, and I thought his name was Phil. And when I heard Phil's Development, the picture I got in my mind was just, you know, like a young 20-something guy working out of his parents' basement on a computer, you know, some little company, which is totally not what it was about.
No, we met this guy a year ago at Guerrilla Business School, and he called us about halfway through the year to help him with this. He's a software development company in the Philippines, hence Phil's Development. And yes, he came to us, which is proof that outsourcing does work both ways.
Yeah.
And he had zero brand identity. He had a very generic website, which had a lot of futuristic clip art, and the copy could have almost been boilerplate. It really didn't say anything of any import.
Well, it was interesting. You were talking about checking out the competition. We went to a lot of different websites for people who do what he does, and you could pretty much take the copy from one and put it into the other.
Yeah, there's a lot of that sort of generic boilerplate reading
mm-hmm.
copy. So who are they? Phil's Development is an offshore software developer that wants to raise the bar for offshoring. There are all kinds of challenges with going offshore when you want to develop software. And each of the cultures you go to presents its own difficulties. You know, the Philippines really benefits from a superior technology worker talent pool, which is really cool. They're not afraid to work hard. They just need direction. And Phil's Development is run by a seasoned Silicon Valley executive who has a track record of success both in U.S. high-tech operations and in his own entrepreneurial ventures. We don't know how much money he made, but we know that he had a gaming sales website that at the peak of its operations was making something like $300 million a year gross. He actually started getting cut off by his suppliers because he was selling too much product, which I don't really understand, but anyway. He knows how to make Westerners feel like even though they're going offshore, they're getting the best of both worlds. They're getting a talented and affordable workforce, and they're also getting experienced Western technology management.
And I want to add something here. We didn't just talk to the fellow who runs the business. We also spoke to some of the people that work for him, some of his programmers, and they were genuinely excited about what they did. They're genuinely excited about moving the ball forward for their clients. And when we asked one of them what his best day at work was, he told us about working for one of his clients, and after I don't know how many weeks, months of working on this project, they got to a point where this client, who was very stern, just broke and just smiled, and that meant the world to him. So we thought, okay, really great people.
So Phil's Development, who is their core customer? The core customer is Mr. Value-Minded Project Director. He's a technology executive at a medium to large company. He's in his 40s. He probably makes about $200,000 a year. And he likes the win of containing costs, but he's really apprehensive about going offshore because he may have heard the horror stories. He may even have lived through his own horror stories. And he values both his reputation and his sanity too much to be taking a risk. He requires reassurance that going offshore is the intelligent choice.
Mm.
And the market is flooded with offshore developers. I mean, there you just, if you start searching for them, you're going to be amazed at what you find. I mean, including websites that look like they were built by 12-year-olds, but they're trying to sell offshore coders and stuff. So Mr. Value-Minded Project Director is concerned about competence. He's concerned about timeliness. He's concerned about leakage, confidentiality, privacy, and security.
Yeah, I'm going to jump back to who our business is very quickly because I think we missed one point that's really important.
What's that?
And that is that the owner of this business really sees himself as future-minded.
He's
always looking to the horizon to see what's coming next so he can use that to better help his customers.
And
that's
a
really big thing with him.
To add one more thing here that you might not expect, he's also a romantic. He's got no choice in the matter. It's in his genes. He's French.
He's a romantic.
Yes. So what makes Phil's Development matter? Well, they want to position themselves as a benchmark in the areas that most concern Mr. Value-Minded Project Director. The brand needs to be reassuring. Mr. Value-Minded Project Director needs to know he's getting not just a contract but a long-term partnership, which requires hard work, it requires care, it requires communication, and Phil's Development has the breadth of experience required to do this. They've got the willingness to be communicative, even if it's not news the client wants to hear, which is key. I mean, delivering bad news is never fun, but it has to be delivered. And they have the kind of commitment required to fulfill all those promises.
And the other thing that we really did differently with him was even though he, at the time that we started this, was a very small company, he realized that a big part of reassuring his core customer was not acting like a small company. You know, he had to act and not be deceitful, but he had to have the swagger of a bigger development company that had been around for a much longer time.
And also the talent pool there is such that at a moment's notice, he would be able to staff up with as many coders and other staff as he would need in order to make this thing happen.
Which is kind of about to happen.
Yeah. more on that in a moment.
Yeah.
So we had to be reassuring that Phil's is one of the few offshore companies capable of living up to the tall order of a Western-style, even Silicon Valley-style of development. So, the new brand became...
Show me the brand.
Fearless Development. And the tagline, honey, would you like to...
I'd love to. We see your vision, and we raise it.
The logo... Go ahead.
No, I was just wanted to talk about the tagline for a moment. So, and the name, Fearless Development. So there's the strength that we were talking about. And we see your vision and raise it. Was very much about the fact that he's working with companies that are creating. And so he's going to complement what they do. He's going to take what they do to an even higher level.
And, you know, the logo, it's interesting. We gave him some really youthful and edgy designs for this thing. And, you know, he actually opted for something much more classic and elegant, which isn't what you would normally expect from a software development company in the 21st century. But he went with a very majestic, stylized eagle, which really fit his personality. And he is absolutely capable of living up to this brand. He knows exactly what he means and what he needs to say when he's speaking. And so much so that he has been able to create one-off marketing efforts that absolutely speak from his brand. We said he came to us after Guerrilla Business School. It was last fall, almost winter. We put the brand together, and today, as at this moment, he is getting ready to sign a huge development contract with one of the biggest internet retailers in the U.S. We can't say the name because nothing's happened yet.
But he did something that we loved. I mean, it was one of those things that I wish I did. So we've got eagles all over the place with him. You know, it was strength, it was vision, all that. And so what he did to get this meeting with...
Don't say the name.
A head person at a very large company that we all know.
Big internet retailer.
Was he sent them a, would you call it a spyglass?
Telescope.
Telescope.
He may have said spyglass, but yeah, it was a telescope.
And engraved on the side of this very fancy telescope in a very nice box, it said, "We see your vision and raise it." And the guy called him immediately.
So. We're impressed with Fearless Development.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are three really small businesses who have taken the definition of branding as we apply it and really figured out how to run with it. Now, as promised, we've got some missteps. One of our favorites, and forgive me if you don't know this campaign, was pervasive, still is pervasive in the U.S. It's Las Vegas. And Las Vegas, for a lot of years, had been trying to build themselves as a family destination, which really kind of flopped. You know, they were trying to compete with Disneyland, basically. What they were trying to do was show all of these montages of all these families having fun at these resorts. And, you know, it's hard to get past the fact that Las Vegas is the original Sin City. Now, they did increase family visits by about 4%, but this
but
wasn't...
But they lost a big chunk of everybody else.
This wasn't true to the Vegas brand, and they gave it up. You know, being the alternative to Disneyland wasn't going to happen. Something else happened that completely changed the way tourists, potential tourists, perceive Las Vegas. It was a campaign called What Happens in Vegas Stays in Vegas.
Which obviously we all know, and which obviously was not to families with children.
No, it was about two consenting adults who are going to go to Las Vegas and misbehave themselves and leave it all there on the strip.
So, I mean, the point of this is you don't get to just decide, I want my core customer to be group X, and then force something down their throat. You really need to pay attention to who's coming to you and why, who's responding to you and why, and aim your focus that way.
You know, I just thought of something, too. You know, they want to be the alternative to Disney, and it didn't work. Now, Disney started a cruise line, and one of the biggest revenue streams on cruise ships is gambling. If you take the family on a Disney cruise, there is no gambling. Oh, and sorry, they have bingo. So Disney absolutely knows their brand, and they're true to it and to their core customer. And, you know, Vegas made a turn there that they probably shouldn't have. It didn't work out, but they could probably afford to make that mistake too.
Well, and that's the reason why branding, taking the time to brand correctly, is so much more important for small business, because, you know, we don't all get to be Geico, who spends
$500 million a year in media.
Yeah, so if Geico does something that brand-wise isn't that intelligent, it just doesn't matter because they brand it down your throat.
Yeah, they are able to make up for any mistakes in their brand as it's portrayed in their advertising in sheer volume, because they just buy so much media.
So the rest of us have to be a little smarter. And speaking of core customer missteps,
this is one of my favorites. No, not New Coke, which is a good one, but it's almost as big a flop. It was about 15 years ago. McDonald's introduced a hamburger called the Arch Deluxe, which was the burger for adults. It was a $300 million flop because McDonald's didn't recognize that they were influencing a key decision maker, someone named Mom. And Mom needs to know that when she takes the kids to McDonald's, she can plug them into some fast food and keep them quiet and happy for however long they're there. But in trying to sell this Arch Deluxe adult burger, the way they did it was by portraying it as the burger that kids didn't like. So there were TV commercials all over the air and billboards all over town, all of them showing golden arches and kids going, ugh, and grimacing and saying, I don't like that. And, you know, like, they didn't want this thing, and it was repellent. But the irony is the hamburger was great, but it never should have been marketed as the burger that kids hate.
Yeah, they definitely turned off Mom. And there's nobody on this call that is in the food business that I recall. But, yeah, just a little note. If you're in the food business, just try to make it all look tasty.
Yeah. you know, if I had been doing this, hindsight is 2020, and you can always look like a genius as a Monday morning quarterback. But if I were marketing the Arch Deluxe, I would have tried to market it as the Happy Meal for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would have been my take on it.
Yep, stick with happy.
So, focusing on one thing.
All right, yeah, let's talk about how focusing can really be a game changer.
Yeah, they're one of the big problems that you'll have in a lot of small businesses is they have more than one prong in the brand and even in the business model. I swear, somebody came up to me after Guerrilla Business School a year ago and said, I know you said we have to focus on one thing, but can't I sell my feather jewelry and my supplements under the same brand?
To which we said no.
Yeah, I mean, I said there could be a way to do it if you weren't selling somebody else's supplements. You know, if you could create a brand that had a reason for supplements and feather jewelry, and it would take a lot of work, you might be able to do it.
Yeah, I couldn't come up with that. I mean, there was a business, maybe you all have heard of it, where they combined two very desperate things, which was Suds and Duds, which was a laundromat where you could hang out and have a beer. But they combined those things for a reason, because when you do...
Well, the bar with the laundromat.
Yeah, when you do your laundry, you obviously have at least an hour or so of downtime, so you might as well drink. But, you know, it made sense for those two things to come together. But typically, not only do you need to focus on one category, but then you need to focus on something within that category. And by the way, when you focus, it doesn't mean that you never get to talk about these other things. What it does is it starts the conversation, and that's always your lead. And once somebody comes in and says, wow, I love your lead, tell me more, then you get to tell them all those other fantastic things.
Yeah, and also, you know, going back to Suds and Duds, I would actually propose that that is a singular business model. It is the laundromat that's fun to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't go to it because it's a bar. You go to the laundromat with a bar.
And that brings out another point with focus, which is the why you point. You know, why go to this laundromat over other laundromats? Well, if you're young and you're single, that's why you go to that laundromat, because you get to hang out. You might meet somebody good.
Yeah. You know, a business category that typically has no focus is jewelers. You know, a lot of jewelers could say, hey, if it sparkles, we got it.
And a lot of them do.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them might also say for all your jewelry needs, which is the kind of line that just makes me crazy. If you have any line anywhere in your marketing that says for all your fill-in-the-blank needs, fire your copywriter immediately.
Yeah, get rid of it. Because, you know, there's no focus there. I do want to say I do have a lot of jewelry needs, but...
Now, okay, here's a caveat. If you look at Tiffany, they are not focusing on a specific category. They are the 900-pound gorilla in the jewelry store category, and so they can afford to not focus.
Well, there's a couple things about Tiffany. I mean, there is a focus in that it's very high-end, and the other thing is they pretty much got there first.
Yeah.
You know,
being first in the category can actually give you a lot of cachet, but things doesn't always work out. Yahoo was here long before Google. And we know who's ahead now.
Yeah. Well, that's why focus helps, because somebody else can come in and do the same thing and do it a little better, or do it with focus, and then you lose.
You know, if you want to look at a jeweler that has really good focus, it's not everybody knows this, I'm sure. They're in California, Texas, and I think there's maybe one store in Utah.
It's one of my favorite pieces of branding focus ever.
Yeah, it's Robbins Brothers. And they used to be just a jeweler. They could have said for all your jewelry needs. I mean, that's how focused they were. And to the credit of their marketing guy, Roy Williams, he turned them into the engagement ring specialist.
Fantastic, and it would fill most jewelers with fear because, of course, well, we sell more than engagement rings. We have bracelets and necklaces and promise rings and cups and all kinds of bangles.
Robbins Brothers exploded when they became the engagement ring specialist. And the reality is that, you know, if you focus on that guy who's buying his first engagement ring and you get him in the door and make him like you, you've got a customer for life, because he's going to have to buy anniversary presents, he's going to have to buy Christmas presents, he's going to have to buy birthday presents. He has got one place to buy all his jewelry now.
And so, I mean, let's go back to what we said in the very beginning, how this business is making itself a friend and creating a relationship. It introduced itself, hi, I'm the engagement ring specialist. It made itself likable, so when these guys come in buying what's potentially the first piece of jewelry they've ever bought in their life, and they're deathly afraid to make a mistake, they sit down with them, they make it okay, here's everything you need to know, don't worry about it, you're going to be great. And then they stay a friend, because when the wife's birthday comes around or the anniversaries come around, hey, we're still there, and we'll still make that decision easier for you.
Yeah, and another jeweler that's got some really good focus and will lead us very nicely into a segue for the next portion of the programming, Kate Jewelers. Kate Jewelers is national, and if you've ever seen or heard their advertising, you know they love to say, every kiss begins with K.
Wow. That's not impressive. But so what they've done is, unlike Robbins Brothers, who focused in on a specific item, they focused in on a specific moment and feeling. So obviously it was very much about romance. And let's face it, Every Kiss Begins with K is not really elevated. They are not competing.
They're
with
not Tiffany, no.
this is affordable jewelry that, you know, it's an anniversary. I want to make her want to kiss me, and then I didn't blow it. So there's K.
And that is a line that is loaded with emotion. Every kiss begins with K. Emotion resonates. We can't emphasize enough the importance of emotion in a brand. However, there is a range of emotions, and you need to make sure you're tapping into the right ones. Like, you know, the emotion around the Arch Deluxe, they tapped into absolutely the wrong emotion. And by mistake, I'm sure. I'm sure they thought they were being geniuses, because that cost a lot of money. I think one of the great examples of how you tap into the right emotions that's out there right now, and if you haven't seen the commercials, go to YouTube and pull them up. emotion is how you get brand evangelists. One of the original brand evangelist customer bases was Apple Computer. I think we mentioned this.
We did.
Yeah, that the Apple Computer was actually saved by its brand evangelists. There's a new brand of evangelists out there, a new band of brand evangelists out there for the Samsung Galaxy 3S. And Samsung has done just a kick-ass job of positioning the iPhone as the smartphone for mindless sheep and your middle-aged parents.
Mindless sheep.
The Samsung Galaxy S3 is cooler, it's smarter, it is the better alternative. Now, speaking personally, I'll tell you, I think Apple is a great, focused, emotionally resonant brand. But Samsung Galaxy is doing a brilliant job of eating the iPhone's lunch. They're tapping into an emotional vein that makes the Apple brand seem less cool than it is.
Well, you know, and if you're in a category, again, knowing what your competition is up to, if you're in a category where you have some competition that's as strong as Apple, you better think of something else. Because they totally own that category. You know, it's not always a great idea to take on the competition head on. In this case, they almost had to. There was pretty much no way around it because they weren't going to be, you know, hipper and you know, sexy or anything like that. They had to be smarter.
Well, here's the thing, too. It's also authentic because people are perceiving this phone as the much hipper alternative to an iPhone.
Well, it's the smarter alternative. It's the thinking person's,
But also the hitter kids are using. But hey, they've done a great job of being emotionally resonant. And, you know, if you want to look at another category that typically has no emotion involved in the marketing, it's plumbers. Once again, for all your plumbing needs, I can't tell you how many times I've had. Or we specialize in service. Hell yeah, you're a service business. Or one of my favorites, look, we can shove a camera into your sewer pipe.
Yeah, it really sounds
good. That's like the flavor of the month now for plumber marketing. And you know, here's one of the problems, is we often expect plumbers to be passively offensive and frustrating. We expect body odor and butt crack.
Nice.
You know, I mean, this will lead us to what is actually an emotionally resonant plumber brand. It's in Los Angeles. I don't remember if anyone here is in Los Angeles, but if you are, you know a very famous plumber, and his brand has actually helped him win a J.D. Power Award for customer satisfaction. His name is Mike Diamond. And Mike Diamond Plumbing, his brand is the on-time, good-smelling plumber. And he actually says himself in his commercials, I guarantee my plumber will show up on time and smell good or your house call is free.
And what you walk away with, because on time, you know, almost kind of fades, but it's really the good smelling plumber, which is a really gutsy thing to do because it really acknowledges what the challenge typically is. But it just makes you kind of excited to call this plumber. I mean, I'm not hoping for plumbing problems, but if I do, like, I want to call this guy. You know, they dared to not talk about the specifics to lead with those bullet points of specifically what they do, how long they've been in business, that they're conveniently located, all those traps that kind of wash over us because everybody says them, so it's almost like white noise.
Yeah.
And they dared to say something that nobody else was saying. Brilliant.
Yeah, guaranteeing the plumber is going to show up on time, I think, might be secondary for me, but only because I'm used to the cable guy. Just, yeah, we'll be there sometime in the next 6 hours. It's like, well, hold it a minute. I got things to do. There's an emotionally resonant plumber brand, and here's one that I like, and I had absolutely nothing to do with. Well, I haven't had anything to do with any of these last.
Well, I was actually going to jump over this one.
Were you going to jump over this one?
I was.
You don't want to talk about it?
No. Let's keep the party moving with World Vision.
Oh, World Vision. If you know World Vision, it's a charity that feeds starving children around the world, and their tagline is, "When you save a child, you save us all." You may know World Vision. You may not know that it's a Christian charity. They definitely have an emphasis on Christianity. They don't lead with it. but it's definitely in there. And that tagline, "When you save a child, you save us all," is really poetry. And it's an example of how poetry is totally crystallization of thought. And especially here, subtext is key. Since it's a Christian company, the word "save" is really loaded.
Well, and there was something else that we did here. You know, when I was working on this account, and they give you all their information, and you're finding about all of these really awful things that are happening around the world and horrible situations that children are in. And then you start to think about the enormity of it, and you could really just sit in a corner and rock yourself, you know, into a coma, because it's so enormous and it's so upsetting. And we tried to focus, I mean, on every level of this. When we get into your marketing, we're going to talk about focus. I mean, and how this just keeps getting smaller and smaller and more narrow and more narrow. And when we focused on one child, when you save a child, you save us all. All of a sudden, I could do that. I couldn't save the world. And you know, again, it was kind of devastating to work on this account. I couldn't save the world, but I could have an effect on one child, and that would have a ripple effect.
This is why, and it's not unique to World Vision. There are others that do it. This is why when you see the World Vision advertising, they're always trying to get you to adopt a child with a monthly donation. And you get letters from this child. You know, it's a one-on-one relationship. It's about as focused as it can be. Honey and I have both worked on this account at different businesses. But this really is a way to grapple with the enormity of such a huge and seemingly insurmountable problem. And I have seen charities that can't do it. They don't understand. They cannot focus down like that. I actually had somebody approach me about doing some advertising for a similar charity. And the work they're doing is, I mean, you know, you think you've seen it all and how bad things can be, and then somebody shows you something worse. And the advertising agency guy who I was working with understood exactly what I was getting at. His big problem was trying to get his client to understand it. She was German and very technical and structured in her thinking, and it wasn't registering with her. The emotional angle and the focus just didn't add up for her. And I don't know if they ever ended up solving the problem. He said he'd get back to me if he could get her on board. It couldn't.
And one more to talk about very quickly, and just because, I mean, it may seem like...
This is one of my favorites.
It may seem like World Vision is almost a gimme. I mean, it's hard to not be emotional when you're getting into that. But this is a very different kind of emotion, and not something that's obviously an emotional business. And the name of the business, they had the name.
It's a stock photography agency.
And it was called Red Images, and this was their name. And everything, it was all stock photography, but specifically Asian. It was Japan, Korea, Japanese. I believe they also had images from India. So that was their focus. And they were selling in the Asian markets, but they were started in the United States. So their initial market was in the U.S. And, you know, stock photography, if you've ever looked at stock photography, which I have a ton, it really all starts to look the same. So they wanted you to feel like, you know...
They had something different.
They had something different, and they wanted you to feel excited to find it. So we came up with the line, "Not Your Stock Asians." And they had a great sense of humor about it, and it just made everybody happy. And ultimately what they ended up doing was selling to Getty Images, which is a nice paycheck.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Man. Okay, yep. Getty Images is like the 900-pound gorilla of stock photography. I did not know the end of that story.
Yeah, that's
wow. That's impressive. Well, okay, in conclusion, the concept of brand is simple. It's going to sound a little simple to say this. Don't complicate it. But if it feels complicated, it means you're not done.
Yeah, if your one brand thought requires you to take like 5 breaths to get that one sentence out, it's probably not down to one thought yet.
Yeah, we made you do it in 10 words or less in the exercise that we gave you. Try to stick to that, just because it is a really good discipline to help you get that focus.
But again, that's the ultimate goal, and it takes work. So if your first narrow down is a paragraph, that's okay.
And you'll know you're finished when it seems really simple. So, who are you? You've got to represent the authentic you or an authentic slice of you. This is key. Who is your core customer? Until you totally know them, it's really difficult to matter. So what makes you matter? You know, how do you become relevant and resonant? And it also is a good idea to know what your competition is up to.
Definitely.
It's a good idea to know what's worked for them and what hasn't. And
yeah, and also, I mean, now with so many businesses and because of internet, there are a million business names out there, and there are a million names that are already taken. So you're going to have to do your due diligence when you land on a name and make sure that somebody else hasn't already thought that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah. And focus is absolutely essential. 50 years ago, you might have been able to get away without being focused. Today, you don't have the luxury of being anything but focused. And Honey actually came up with this recently. I really like it. She said one way to facilitate this might be to have someone explain yourself to you. Somebody who knows you well, or maybe even a good customer, because it could give you some eye-opening perspective on who the authentic you is relative to who your core customer is.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know how you come across to the world. I mean, you know what you do. You know why it's important to you. Is that what everybody else is seeing? Because they may give you a tick of insight that would be hard to see from the inside.
And
when I'm talking about you, I'm also talking about your business. If you already have a business that's up and running, or if you've already been providing your service in some form to people, have people explain to you what your service is about.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, one of the things I used to do when I was doing radio advertising for small businesses is I would say, look, have you got any love letters from your customers that you can share with me? Because it gives you a perspective on the business that the business owner can't, typically.
Now, I just had a customer tell me I'm a goddess. Should I lead with that?
Sure.
Perfect.
I've always said that.
Yeah.
This proves I'm right. And also, just a little, not a warning, but just be prepared that if you're coming up with a company name, it can be a long process. If you've read that far in the book, Angie.
Which is the very end.
You've seen how it can work. We show only a fraction of what went into the name for Salt Dental Practice Management. There are a lot of bad names. A lot of them are redundant. It doesn't matter. Write it all down. It all helps.
Yeah, I mean, if you've come up with 5 names and you pick one, you haven't worked hard enough. I mean, you need to write down like 50 names. And you may come back to name one, but the problem is when you just write down like 5 names, 10 names, you'll notice that the same words are in each name, and you've just kind of regrouped them. Like you play each name on a dice, and you roll them on the table and rearrange them. And once you realize that, oh, heck, I'm aiming for 50 names, all of a sudden there comes a point where you start to use different words that you never thought of, and your head opens up, and all of a sudden some other ideas come in, and often that's where the really good stuff is.
Now, we're going to throw this out there just because it's somebody in this group, and we think they've already really are heading in a terrific direction. You heard Giancarlo and Andrew on this call. They basically started as a website selling supplements. And they started to realize that the biggest customer segment they had was 40-year-old men who were buying
male enhancement?
Yeah, I would say male enhancement supplements. I was trying to figure out the nice way to say it.
Well, there you go. That's nice.
So they are shifting over to a business that sells male supplements and supports it with all kinds of things that feed into that core demographic, and the name of the business is Alpha Male Supplements. I think I got that right, didn't I?
Well, we're going to find
out. We're going to find out in a minute when we unmute.
Why don't we unmute and we can start to have this. We'll keep talking about this for a moment, and then Joe Carlo can tell us how wrong we got it.
How is everybody? Anyone left?
Yes,
we're good.
Silence was worrying me for
a
moment.
So basically, from the information that we've gotten so far from Giancarlo and from Andrew, where they were finding the bulk of their traffic, and then they focused their business there. Now, my guess is this doesn't mean that if somebody comes to them and wants a supplement for something else, that they're not going to sell it. But once they focus on one category, they can start to say, okay, who's the person buying in that category, as opposed to who is the all of supplement buyers, you know, like how many ailments are there out there? So they can start to have a conversation that's much more resonant because they know much more about who they're talking to, if that makes sense.
So good on you guys.
Really nice start.
Yeah, like that. So, does anybody have any questions?
I'm just wondering how we're going to interact with you around our particular businesses. Do you have a plan in mind?
Who are we speaking with now?
This is Judith from Berkeley, California.
Judith. Yeah. What we wanted to do was go through the three teleseminars so we can do the heavy lifting of what you need to know about brand, what you need to know about marketing.
The heavy lifting actually is
the pitfalls to avoid. And then when we have our, consultation.
One-on-one.
That's when we're really dealing one-on-one with you specifically about your business. But again, in the meantime, between time, anything you want to send us so we can start thinking more about what you have going on and how we can help, send it. If you have questions specifically about your business, send them.
But basically,
and we'll start to respond to you throughout this process.
Ultimately, what has to happen is you need to go through the teleseminars, you need to do the work in Billion Dollar Branding in the workbook, and start coming to your brand. And one of the reasons we are giving you 6 months after the third teleseminar to schedule that consultation is because it could take you that long.
For some people, you're further along in your business.
Some people are probably ready now.
By the way, I think your business is really interesting. And I do think that you've very much started to focus. I think your price points make your business a complete no-brainer.
I was ready to get involved.
Yeah.
I wanted to rent.
I really like what you're doing.
Yeah.
I like that you've focused, basically so everybody knows what her business is currently called, and I do think you're going to need a new name, but right now it's called Our Third Act, and it's for people 50 and over, and she's creating spaces where people can come together, and they have a desk, they have a phone, they have a computer, and they can work on business. They're not doing stuff by themselves, home, alone. It's much more social. But what I really like about, she's empowering adults, but it's focused. You're not saying, and we're talking about healthy living, and we're talking, here's what you're eating, and here's your workout. You're very focused on business. And I don't know if you have workshops that talk about these other things, and it doesn't mean you can't, but again, you know what you're offering them. I was really impressed when I looked at your stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that once your message is a little more succinct, if you could say what you're doing in half a sentence, and what you're doing, I think is really fantastic. So I don't think it's going to take long for somebody to go, that's great. And have a really great name and tagline, and we're going to work with you on that, and we can talk about what it should look like specifically. But hopefully, once you go through the workbook and the branding book, that's going to help you really get a jump on the consultation.
Okay, well, I'm going to get going on that this week.
Okay, super. Other questions?
Hey, this is Angie. So can you send me a hit list of what to focus on? I'll definitely get it done.
Angie, I do not question that you will get it done. Angie, by the way, is the one who sent us the 9-page document. I just love that then you sent me an email of, you know, by the way, when you read this, I'm like, I read that as soon as I got it. There is no way that somebody is doing this, sending me a 9-page document, and I'm not jumping on it. I think with you, you gave us enough information that I kind of want to start wrangling you in. We will send you some questions off of what you sent us.
Awesome. Sounds wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Sure. Any other questions?
All right.
Yeah, a question.
Okay,
this is Sarah Stramlonson from Tucson. And were we supposed
this is,
to have gotten...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name one more time.
Sarah Stramlonson.
Okay.
Arizona. Should we have gotten the workbook and all that stuff in the mail yet?
You didn't get it. They didn't hand it to you at the Girl Business School?
No.
No, they were supposed to do that.
You didn't leave with the package?
No.
Okay. That's a problem. We will remedy that. Do me a favor. Send me your mailing address where you can receive UPS packages. Or actually, let me think here. Trying to decide what will be best, UPS or... Anyway, send me an address that can receive packages, and we'll figure it out.
So you didn't get the book, you didn't get the workbook, you didn't get the Kill Your Advertising package?
No, we didn't get anything. They just said, okay, they'll send it to you in the mail. I don't know who it was we talked
to. Okay, somebody assumed that. We actually left them a whole pile of products so that we had gone...
I'm so sorry. Yeah. We'll get that to you as soon as possible.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
They'll be coming at you.
Okay. So the next conversation that we're going to have, we're going to focus on what you do once you have your brand, once you know how you want people to feel about your business. How do you then get the word out? Because, unfortunately, the mistake that a lot of us make at this point is that whole kind of thought of if you build it, they will come. Unfortunately, that's not usually how it happens.
Yeah, keep building it.
So we're going to talk about how to get the word out.
All right. Okay, so here is the deal with the download. We're going to have to edit it, and I'm going to have to do a little bit of magic since I think we missed the first 15 minutes of recording due to operator error.
Fantastic.
The operator was not paying enough attention to what the prompts were telling him. But nonetheless, it should be up there by end of day tomorrow. So if anybody wants to download it, we'll be sending you a link, and you will be able to download this to carry around on your iPod or burn to a CD and play back in the car when you're driving to work.
Yeah,
because no doubt you're going to want to do that. I can't think of anything better.
Yeah. If you have, during this week, if any questions come up about what we talked about or what you've read so far, send the questions. If you're starting to have thoughts about your business, send them. It's just helpful for us to then give you the most...
And we'll address the questions in the upcoming teleseminar.
Unless we send an email back.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, this is Juliana Erickson.
Hi, Juliana.
I have a question. Yeah, hi. I am wondering, so before the next teleseminar, we should have read the workbook and done the other.
Do it at your own speed.
At that point?
It's not a requirement. It'd probably be helpful, but it by no means do you have to have finished any of it.
Yeah, I mean,
don't feel any pressure.
There are people on this call in really various stages of their business. Some people are up and running and have been up and running for a couple of years, and some people on the call have the idea for their business and they haven't implemented it yet. Even down to, I know the category I want to be in, not sure exactly the service I'm going to provide. So, it depends where you're at. And I know that you've got a book coming out, correct?
That's right.
It sounded like you understood that you want everything to hold together. So I already actually have some questions for you. So let me see if I can send those to you as well, about how your book relates to your business and, you know, if that segment is viable for the business or if it's just a segmented part of it. I'll be more articulate in the email.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
I have a question. This is Ken Moskal.
Hi, Ken.
Hey.
Hi. What is the best order to do the work in, the billion-dollar branding first and kill your
advertising? Start with the billion-dollar branding.
Definitely billion-dollar branding first. Everything starts with brand.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the first chapter of Kill Your Advertising reviews brand.
No, but, second chapter of Kill Your
Advertising. Yeah, so when you read that chapter, you should just be nodding and be like, yep, I get it, that makes sense, quick refresher, and then...
Yeah, you'll read chapter two and go, oh, I already got this nailed,
yeah,
and you'll move on.
But, you know, it can't hurt to hear it enough. I mean, I've been doing this for decades, and... You just can't do it enough.
Yeah, the next teleseminar, although it is brand-related, will also pertain more to Kill Your Advertising, which is essentially how to take that brand and deliver it to the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Great, thank you.
Sure thing.
Very good. Well, thank you all. Sorry, one more?
When is the next one going to be?
Next Wednesday, the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all successive Wednesdays. You know, and once we get through those three, we can start scheduling consultations. But again, it's fast or slow up to 6 months. But, you know, if you're ready right away, we jump in. If you're like, you know what, I need a little time to digest. I got to wait a couple months. That's fine, too.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to feel pressure to be reading the book and doing the work. You know, we have people who are ripping through it, and we've got other people who have other distractions in their lives that are...
Yeah, I mean, it's a thoughtful process.
So,
when we're doing a brand for a client, the average is 12 weeks. Some have gone faster, some have gone slower because of communication. But, I mean, also for us, when we're learning somebody's business, it just takes a little bit of time to ramp up and really understand what's at the heart of what they're doing. So, you know, definitely it's a thoughtful process.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Right.
Thanks for being here.
Next week.
I will send out another email next week before the teleseminar reminding you of all the call-in details and the times. And we'll talk to you then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay,
take care.
Bye, all.
This has been The Right Road to Your Brand, the first in the Big Bad Branding Teleseminar series. Copyright 2013 by Blaine and Honey Parker. All rights reserved.